97.5, The Fanatic.
Let the big dog hunt. Hello again, everybody. Joe Stasiak in the house with you. Good morning, Philadelphia. I'm here till noontime. Seems like I was just here, and I was. I was here till 8 o'clock last night. Tyler Zuli took you to Checkpoint Radio at 10 o'clock. But I'm back in the chair for three more hours. Sports Armageddon continues, day 13. I'm with Josh Rabick. He's behind the glass, taking your calls at 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. We shall call this show Miracle at Bala 1. Miracle at Bala 1. I'll get to why we're going to call this show that in a second, but I do want to talk some Eagles today. Again, oh, my chair just collapsed again. Hey, Josh, you there? Can you get on a headset for one sec? Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say, hello, good morning, and if you could talk for like 10 seconds while I switch chairs so we don't have dead air.
All right, sounds like a plan, Joe.
Thanks, buddy. You can kind of preview what we're doing today. Give me one sec. I'll get a new chair.
Yeah, so today, Joe, we're going to be highlighting that one moment that we still can't believe that happened. This can cover Philadelphia sports. This can cover anything in the four major sports. We can go into college basketball, college football. Everything's on the table. What is the one moment that you still can't believe happened?
That's very well said. I appreciate that, pal. Now I got a chair. I got the big boy chair now. Same thing happened to me yesterday. You'd think I'd learn, but I didn't. So anyway, sports Armageddon continues. We have some guests coming on the show today. We have Les Bowen, who covers the Philadelphia Eagles, beat writer for the Birds, Philadelphia Inquirer. He comes on at 10:10. Harold Jensen from the 1985 National Championship Villanova Wildcat team that beat Georgetown back in 85, April 1st, 1985. He'll be on at 10:30. And then, of course, Steve Callis, staple of the program. He comes on at 10 after 11. Josh, you don't have to get on air, but just tell me, do you hear crackling? Should I change this mic next break? I'm wondering if I hear crackling coming through, or is that just my headphones?
Yeah, we'll take a look at it next break.
Okay, because I did same thing happened yesterday. You think I learned, Josh? You know, I was just here like 9 minutes ago, and both things are happening again. So I shall probably be moving seats in a little bit. Not that anyone at home cares, but happy to be with you. I don't like to start out the show ripping things or complaining about things. I like to be upbeat, but I do like to keep things real. People construe that sometimes as being negative, but I will qualify this by saying I do not have positive information on this, so I can't confirm this, and I'm going to be careful how I say this because I like the company, I like the show, and I have a lot of good friends over there. I get up today early. I was up at like 4 o'clock just because I can't sleep. And I knew I had to prep again to do another show because I'm trying to make this show a little different than last night's show. Trying to keep it fresh. It's not going to lie to you. It's getting tougher and tougher. Now the free agency is getting further and further away. There's less to talk about until the draft, which is in a month. There's no baseball. Hockey and basketball look like they're in jeopardy. Like their entire seasons are in jeopardy. Football, we don't even know if football will be around come September. Thank God this is happening now. And again, I don't want to take anything positive out of this pandemic, but if there's anything you could look at and say, well, I guess it's good it's happening now, it's because football is still 6 months away, 5 months away. Take away my football, and now we have a problem. All right? I can probably survive. Obviously, I can survive the tournament not being here. I never thought I could do that. I can survive missing the NBA playoffs. It's going to be tough to swallow, but I can probably deal with missing the NHL playoffs too. Can't deal with missing football. Sorry. I don't care about training camp. I don't care about any of that. I can't stand the preseason. I don't get into the training camp like others do. Get me to the regular season. Get me to games that count. That's why I think the seasons are so, they're so stretched out. both basketball and hockey. I mean, back in the day, I used to live for every game. Excuse me, when I was growing up. Now there's so many games. There's 82 games in hockey, 82 games in basketball. They only really mean something come postseason. I know you're jockeying for position the whole time, and I know it's a whole thing about entertainment for, you know, the first 4 or 5 months until you get into the postseason. But once you get into the postseason and you really watch how the level of play changes, you look back and say, well, why would I spend money watching the regular season when I can watch this, when I can save my money or save my time and watch this? You know, this is what I'm going to miss. I know you have to get, it's like a necessary evil getting through the regular season of basketball and hockey. And hockey's gotten good around this place. They've won 9 of 10, had the Flyers. People might have forgotten that. This came at a very inopportune time for Le Flyer. The Sixers were still struggling. They're still a dysfunctional mess. But as I watch them right now on Comcast Sportsnet play the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's my problem. I woke up before, went back to sleep a little bit, but, you know, I wanted to wake up early to prep a little bit, and, you know, I watch my sports centers and repeats and repeats and repeats, and I bounce around to FS1 and NFL Network, and then at 7 o'clock I'm waiting for, you know, Sportsnet Central, because it's all local. I did my national, you know, did my national duties, did my prep from a national standpoint, which there's not much going on, got to be honest. But it's something to watch. And all of a sudden, I hear Mark Zumov, welcome everybody to Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What? What are we doing here? It's 7 o'clock. Am I missing something? Is this a spoof? They're doing a spoof, and they're pretending there's a game coming up? Because I'm waiting to see Sportsnet Central. I'm waiting to see my boy Danny Pummels or my girl Amy Fadul. I've got some good friends over there. I think they're great. I think the show's great. I think they do a great job. They do a great job with our program, Mike Missinelli, the Mike Missinelli Show from 2 to 6. That's really well produced. You have to understand how, I don't want to come off on my, like I'm on an ivory tower, but how television kind of works. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes to lend. It's called production value. And it's gotten better and better and better and better since the show began, the Mike Missinelli Show. It is really well produced. They are really in sync. Mike Missinelli and the producers, I don't know Booney personally, but does a great job. That show, you know, is outstanding. But there was no Sportsnet on today. Okay, now I know things have gotten weird. It has become bizarro land. Nothing really surprises me anymore. Okay, so that happened. So now I can't go to a restaurant. I actually went to Dairy Queen the other night. Dairy Queen was open until 8 o'clock. It was a night to get out. We got out. We went out for 20 minutes. Got myself a what is it called? A Blitz or a I can't even remember what the hell it was called. And then I ran my wife into, she had to go to Giant for a second. It was a big night out for the family. Three of us went out for ice cream. We went out for something she had to pick up at Giant. I think yeast, because she's making bread. It lasted about 20, 25 minutes. That was our big night out. But nothing surprises me anymore. But I've felt empathy and sympathy for SportsCenter because they have a lot of time to fill. A lot of time to fill. And they do a lot of shows per day. Lots of shows per day. We do as well. We got to put together, you know, 15, 18 hours of programming a day as well, local programming, okay, with no games. Not easy to do. It's not an easy thing to do. I'm not patting ourselves on the back. It's just not easy to do. You understand, you listeners at home, I don't know if you're still listening. It can be a tough listen sometimes when there's nothing going on, so the hosts try to be creative, and we try to do the best we can. I know the networks are replaying great games of the, you know, of March Madness past. They've been doing it the last few Sundays, has CBS. I know Comcast Sportsnet has been replaying Sixers games, the Flyers playoff game with the Penguins game 6 from 2012, as Josh Raybeck reminds me, has been on a few times. But it's a struggle. It's a challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. But SportsCenter does it. We do it. Are you telling me that Sportsnet Central canceled this morning's show because they didn't have games last night? They can't fill, and you know they're down to 15-minute shows, with which commercial breaks makes it about probably like a nine minutes of content. Every 15 minutes, it's a new show. I kind of like the way they do that now. It used to be an hour. It used to be 1 hour. Then it was a half hour. Now it's 15 minutes. Every quarter hour, they do it. They put together a whole show. And I like that. You miss the first 15 minutes. You turn it on. You're at the beginning at 7:15. You can watch 7:15 to 7:30. No show. Now, I don't know this as a fact. All I know is the fact is it wasn't on at 7 o'clock. And I have a major problem with that. I think that is incredibly lame. I keep calling it Comcast. NBC Sports Philadelphia. If you're not doing shows because there are no games right now, guess what? We're all in this together. All right? You have an obligation to us. We pay you and our cable providers specifically for you to have original content and programming on the air, and that's part of it. Now, am I that upset? There was nothing. I was going to learn nothing from it today. Trust me. Everything I talked about yesterday would probably be on the air this morning and whatnot. It's the principle of the matter that they had no show this morning. Now, again, if I am wrong, if there was something that happened, God forbid lightning hit the studio, or maybe the coronavirus was going around in the studio when that was happening, I get it. SportsCenter's still going on. I watch their talk shows in the morning. They're doing it. Everyone's remote. If you watch Wake Up in the morning now, Mike Greenberg's somewhere, and they have two other guests or three other guests in different spots, not in the same building. If you watch First Take, Stephen A. is somewhere. The Molly, whatever her name is, the mediator, is somewhere. And Max Kellerman is somewhere else. They're not together. Same thing with that show with my buddy, Jenna Wolf. First Things First with Nick Wright. And they used to be Chris Carter. I forget who is now. They're in different rooms. Well, SportsCenter still has their host together. All right. When they go to a guest, it's a remote guest. Comcast. NBC Sports Philadelphia has one host. Are you telling me that what? Well, I don't know what you're telling me. There's a problem because of cross-contamination, because of what? Because I went through and I fast-forwarded it to tomorrow. It looks like you're having a show at 7 o'clock. You didn't have a show today? I don't know if you had a show yesterday. Maybe you didn't have a show yesterday because there were no games. But my question is, why are you having shows on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, which it looks like you are, according to the guide, and not on weekends? It's the same thing. You guys do 15 minutes every, you know, you do a 15-minute show and then just keep replaying it. How hard is that? Now, I know it's hard to put content together, but listen, you have Howie Roseman from Thursday. You have national stories. God forbid you should do national stories. One national story, very sad. Bobby Hebert's dad passed away from the coronavirus. Bobby Hebert played for the Saints for like 7 years, played for the Falcons, went to Northwest Louisiana State, played for the Michigan Panthers of the USFL, beat the Stars in the inaugural season. By the way, that's not Josh Herbert's dad. All right, someone has called in before and said, oh, yeah, Bobby Hebert. No, it's Herbert and Hebert. All right, they're not related. And Bobby Hebert's dad, though, his son plays for LSU, or did, and his dad just passed away from the coronavirus, unfortunately. And he had beat, like, colon cancer and heart disease, and he beat all these things and succumbed to the COVID-19, unfortunately. But anyway, I was disappointed with NBC Sports Philadelphia. And I mean, shame on you for not doing a show if and only if it's because there were no games last night. You're having too much of a problem putting together content? Seriously? We're all doing it. ESPN's doing it. Fox Sports 1 is doing it. Okay, now I could be wrong. There could be another reason. So that's why I'm qualifying it by saying this. Because I don't want to, you know, I tend to put my 11 and a half size foot in my mouth often. I'm just saying, all I know is that I waited up from 5 a.m. till 7 o'clock to watch my Sportsnet Philly, NBC Sports Philadelphia, whatever it's called these days, and it wasn't on the air. And I was incensed out of principle. I couldn't give a rip about the content. I wasn't going to learn anything. I might have caught some ideas. See, I look for ideas. I look for something to give me an idea of something. I'm not copying off of anybody else's show or what they're doing. We're all doing kind of similar things. We're talking about, you know, the main topics that are going on these days. You know, the Eagles, why didn't they land DeAndre Hopkins when he was on the table? You know, acquiring Darius Slay, giving up a couple picks for him, paying him big money to come here to be one of the cornerstone cornerbacks for this team, getting rid of Malcolm Jenkins, letting him walk and go to New Orleans. Things of that nature. What are they doing with the wide receivers? They still haven't done anything with the wide receivers yet. Nothing. I'm not being hyperbolic. Nothing. They've done nothing. They still have Alshon coming back from the Liz Frank injury, Deshaun coming back from a core injury, Greg Ward Jr. coming back from being Greg Ward Jr., and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside coming back from 10 catches last year. 10 catches in 16 games and 5 starts. So that's what they've done. Nothing. But anyway, I got off on a tangent a little bit because that really, really kind of hit a nerve today. That they were not doing a show, and the only thing I could think of, and they were playing a Cavaliers game from I don't even know when. I know it was close because the score was tied in the fourth quarter when I was in there talking to Josh in our big time pre production meeting with the two of us standing 6.5 feet away from each other. The side question today is going to be in light of this, because nothing surprises me anymore, and it kind of gave me the idea this morning when I didn't see Sportsnet Philly on or NBC Sports Philadelphia, again, whatever you want to call it. And there are a lot of things out there in the real world that I didn't realize are actually happening until I've, looked into them. So my thing is, give me one thing in sports that you still actually can't believe happened. You still can't believe happened. That's why I watch sports. It's the greatest reality show going. The greatest reality show there is. Like I'm watching right now, I'm watching the end of Georgetown, Houston in 1984. They beat Phi Slamma Jamma the second year in a row after they lost to NC State. NC State might have been a thing that, if you watch Survive in advance, the Jimmy Valvano story with that crew beating Phi Slamma Jamma after, having to crawl and scratch and claw their way into the tournament, which at the time, before 1985, it was 52 teams. It became 64 in 1985, the biggest field of all time, and has remained 64 since. But going all the way, and I mean, that rivaled Villanova knocking off Georgetown. I still can't believe that happened. We're going to have Harold Jensen on this morning at around 10:30. We usually have him on every year at this time to talk about Villanova and what they're doing next year and what they're doing this year and usually when they're making a run. And then I, reflect. We get a little reflective, talk about the 85 team, and he still gets mentioned when a guy comes off the bench and does some things well in the tournament. So he is still an icon, a March Madness icon. And so we'll talk to him at 10:30. Les Bowen at 10:10 to talk some Eagles, because I wanted to be a little more fair with Howie Roseman, because I come down on him a lot. I do give him praise when I think he deserves praise. I thought what he did in the offseason in 2017 was phenomenal. Every move he made, everything he touched turned to gold and worked perfectly, and it ended up with a parade down Broad Street. Having said that, his off seasons since have not been that great, and you can't win championships via free agency and or trade. You just can't. You have to build your team through the draft, and you tweak. You get your team to the next level, or you make up for a mistake through free agency or the draft. They can't select cornerbacks to save their lives or defensive backs. I went through them yesterday. I'll go through them again later. His picks since 2010. So what did they have to do? They went out and got Darius Slay. They made a trade for Darius Slay. They tried to sign Byron Jones. He went to Miami. But they obviously have tried to draft a cornerback or two to be back there and be their steadies for 10 to 12 years like Lito and Sheldon were. And 3 years ago in 2017, they drafted Sidney Jones in the second round, Rasul Douglas in the third round, and neither have done much. Rasul Douglas at least has done something. Sidney Jones has done virtually nothing. And neither got a snap in the playoff game. That tells you how much they think of those two players. Neither took a snap in the game against Seattle in the playoffs in January. So to me, if I'm grading them, I'm grading them both busts. If you can't get on the field 3 years later, you were supposed to be a starting cornerback or very close to it. You can't get on the field for a snap in a big playoff game at home 3 years later, you're a bust. So I always say, and we criticize, and I will criticize, I'm sure, and maybe I'll laud some of the picks that Howie makes coming up at the end of this month, at the end of next month, in the draft. But I think it's fair that really you can really only evaluate a draft about 3 or 4 years down the line. You have to give time guys time to develop. There are some drafts where you can evaluate right away because guys step in right away and make a big impact. That has not happened for this team in the last 10 years. Virtually no impact guys early. Couple here and there. Miles Sanders was a recent one. Dallas Goedert, a semi-recent one. He's done some things. He's shown some flashes. Zach Ertz and Lane Johnson, right away they became big hits. Okay, that was 2013. I'll give those to Howie, even though Chip was here for that. That was his first year. But aside from 2015, we're going to go over the drafts from 2016, starting with Carson Wentz. He was the first pick in the 2016 draft for the Eagles. He was the second pick overall. And I want you to call in, give an Eagles point, give the moment in sports you can't actually believe happened. Let me give you an example. It's too easy to pick Villanova. Villanova beating Georgetown, big dogs, making it all the way through to the tournament, through North Carolina and Dayton and Maryland and Michigan and Memphis State, and finally having to get through Georgetown, winning that game. All right, too easy. I'm talking about something like Jim Joyce blowing the perfect game for Armando Galarraga, something like that. You can give me another game as well, something similar to Villanova Georgetown, but I'm saying that's kind of easy. I'm saying something maybe a little bit more abstract that you still can't believe happened. Okay, I'll give you another one. I don't want to give everything away, and we have to take a break, but Kirk Gibson hitting the home run off of Dennis Eckersley. I mean, how improbable is that? Improbable. It was impossible. He had a left hamstring tear and a right knee issue. And on a full count, he hits a two-run shot to beat the A's in game one of the World Series in Dodger Stadium. Not the easiest place in the world to hit home runs. He rocks one just with his hips and his arms, rocks one, wins the game. They go on to sweep the series. Dodgers win the whole thing in 1988. Something like that, something you can't believe happened. I mentioned NC State. I still can't believe that happened. I watched Survive in advance. I've watched it 3 times so far during this pandemic. And it's still amazing what they did, what they had to accomplish, what they had to overcome to finally get to the game, to beat Phi Slamma Jamma. And they did that, and they win the whole thing on basically a buzzer beater, a dunk off of an air ball by Derek Wittenberg. Lorenzo Charles dunks the ball. Certainly rivals Chris Jenkins' buzzer beater. That could be one as well. I still can't believe that those last 10 seconds happened. I can't believe Marcus Paige hit that shot with 4.7 seconds left for Carolina to complete a 10-point comeback with 4 minutes left and putting Villanova in a position to do that. And then Jenkins comes down and, oh, yeah? You want to bury a pumping a pump and chuck three. I'm going to bury one at the buzzer here to win the whole thing. I mean, that was ridiculous. So something like that. And the Nova Georgetown game, by the way, is on CBS 1 o'clock today on channel. What would that be? What would CBS be these days? I guess Channel 3 used to be NBC. They flip-flopped those. But anyway, 1 o'clock CBS, Nova and Georgetown. Harold Jensen coming on at 10:30 to talk a little bit about Nova and Georgetown and some other things going on with this pandemic, what he's doing and what the team is doing. And we got to take a break. I'm Joe Stazak. I'm here till noon today on 97.5 The Fanatic, 610-632-0975. Give me a call.
The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show. 9:30 here at 97.5. The Fanatic, Joe Stazak in the house. Got a lot, and I mean a lot of replies to our question of the day. What can you still not believe happened in sports? Considering this whole thing, I would have never imagined. If you told me this a month or two ago, I'd be, what are you talking about, pandemic? What the hell does that mean, pandemic? You mean we're not allowed to go to restaurants and what? We're not allowed to go where? We can't, the schools are shut down? What? Wait, I can't watch sports tonight? What are you talking about? In light of that, because I never thought we'd be in this position, you know, if you asked me this 2 months ago. This Chinese flu thing that has taken the world by storm. By the way, I got a tweet. Let me try to find it because I mentioned, I hate when I have to do this, when I have to kind of, okay. I'm not reprimanding here, but I had mentioned that Bobby Hebert used to play for the Saints and the Falcons and the Panthers of the USFL. His dad died yesterday from coronavirus. He was 81. I said it was a shame. You know, he had beaten colon cancer and heart disease and whatnot. I don't know if this was a rip, but at Paul Arch 65 says, it's tragic that anyone is dying from COVID-19. It's not more tragic if it's an athlete's relative. I never said it was. So I don't know if you're taking a shot at me, but listen to what I say and not to what your pea brain is interpreting. All right. I never said it was more tragic. This is just something that was news, and I'm mentioning it. Bobby Hebert's dad died of COVID-19. I'm not saying it's more.
It's noteworthy too because it's a household name for you as well. Like, right. It's tragic when anybody passes away, but some Joe Blow in Utah that you've never met, you're not going to talk about it because it wasn't relevant to your life. We don't have time to cover that.
Thank you. Well said, that's Josh Raybeck, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, and if it wasn't a shot, that's fine. I apologize. But it sounds like it was a shot that I was saying that, or implying it was more tragic that it was a relative of an athlete, a well-known athlete or a somewhat well-known athlete that used to play for the Saints. Actually, was the losing quarterback of the only playoff game that Randall won here. When Rich Kotite was the head coach, they won in New Orleans. He beat Bobby Hebert that day. Bobby Hebert was 0-3 in a lifetime in the playoffs, all three losses with the Saints. He did win a championship in the USFL, beating the Philadelphia Stars. And his son plays for LSU, or did play for LSU, and his grandfather, his father, but the kid's grandfather, passed away yesterday. I just mentioned it because it was news. My question was things that you never... You still can't believe actually happened in sports. I'll read a few tweets. I don't want to give them all away, but I have from BWM213, Nova buzzer beater. I swear I'd never witness a Philadelphia area team pull that off. Glad I'm wrong now. Josh Raybeck, do we have Jim Nance from 2016? Chris Jenkins?
Go length of the court with Archie Diacono. 3 seconds at midcourt. Jenkins gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
I can't get enough of that. I got to be honest. I'll give you a little secret, a little inside tip about how screwed up I am. That game was on last Sunday. I had mentioned before that I had taped that game, you know, on a DVR. And God forbid anyone would ever touch that game. Well, I had broken up with my now wife for a month or so back then, back like 3 years ago, and she had erased it in the meantime. Could have killed her. Well, I should have broken up with her again when we got back together for doing that. Could have killed her. I was like, we're sitting around her house one night, and we'd been back together for a while. I'm like, oh, I just want to see that end of the game again. And it was on, because I taped it on her TV. She's like, I'm like, you're kidding, right? You deleted that? You're kidding. Should have whacked her again.
There's nothing worse than when you go to put it in, replay it, and you see last time on Young and the Restless.
Yeah, right? So I taped it last weekend. It was on again, and it shows you how much time we have on our hands. I had a text thread of about 13 friends of mine that went to Nova. We all watched the game at the same time. This was after I watched the Virginia and Texas Tech game. That was on, but I still will in the morning, if I need to get myself going or get myself jacked up, I will watch the end of that game, watch the Jim Nance call. I will watch the Marcus Page shot because they had a 10-point lead with 4.5 minutes left, 4:45 left, and Marcus Page hits that shot, the pump three-pointer from deep to tie the game. I wanted to puke. I really wanted to puke. That's how bad I felt at that point. Like, figuring if this game gets to overtime, all the momentum has shifted to Carolina, and this could be a problem. I mean, Carolina had the bigs. Nobody did a great job with Daniel Wesefu and Reynolds holding them at least in check the whole game while playing very well and shooting 56%. It's hard to beat a team when you shoot 56%. But if that game goes to overtime, I'm not so sure Nova comes out on top. So for Chris Jenkins to hit that and to not let it get to overtime. And the Jim Nance call was phenomenal. I like Jim Nance, but he's not known for his calls. He's just known for his work, and he does a great job with whatever he does. Jim Nance is good. He's fine. I like him.
I got to tell you, Joe, too.
Nothing against him.
The end of that game was insane because, as a lot of people know, I'm a big-time pro wrestling fan, and we were at Monday Night Raw at the time, and we're in, like, the suite and club level.
You're kidding.
Well, as soon as it's over, we all, like, rush the TVs because we're watching the end of this game, and we're watching Carolina march back, and Aaron's doing the, like, they're split between Villanova and Carolina. Like, everyone's on separate sides.
No way.
Oh, when I tell you, like, Raw ended, and people hung out for another, like, 25 minutes watching the end of this game, the oohs and the ahs, it was unreal.
You're kidding. Wow. See, I love that. I love that raw, you know, not looking back on it, not knowing which way it was going to go. That's why I like listening to good calls, because, you know, at the time, the announcer doesn't know what's about to happen, and you can listen to his raw emotion. And I thought Jim Nance really did it justice. And I couldn't pull another Jim Nance call out of any orifice of my body. I just know that he's on all the time. He does a nice job, and he's been on with well, I know Brent used to do with Billy Packer. I guess Jim Nance then did with Billy Packer before Billy Raftery. But, I mean, he does, you know, the Masters, and he does everything. But he gave that a great call, and I still can't believe that happened. And we still have a lot of people tweeting. And Josh, let me ask you something. Give me like, maybe one of yours, something you still can't believe actually happened.
I'm going to have to go with Game 5 Phillies 2008 World Series, and with the rain delay, too. Did that feel just so Philadelphia? Because that's the time where we had the bigger drought with no major championships.
Yep.
And I just remember, like, thinking, okay, you know, I'm not going to see a Philadelphia major championship in my lifetime. It's just not in the cards for me. That's what's going to happen. So you have the rain delay and everything, and then all of a sudden you're like, great. They were going to win that game. You have the rain delay. It's like, yeah, now the Rays, they recollect themselves.
Sure,
they come back.
Regroup.
They win this game.
Yep.
And it goes to Tampa Bay for game 6 and game 7. This is how it happens. So when the game closes out, when Brad Lidge closes out that game, I remember just sitting there and looking at my buddy. I'm like, this ain't real. Like, this can't be. It's like almost this numbing feeling of you couldn't believe it actually happened.
That was unbelievable. Yeah, I was there. I was covering for Fox. Give you that story on the other side. But it was just, it was wild. I was around in 83. I was in 11th grade. I did get to see the Sixers beat the Lakers and sweep them. I was also at the game where the Flyers beat the Bruins. So I've been fortunate enough to see a couple championships in this town, but we've certainly left many more rings on the table than we have on our fingers in this town, unfortunately. Got to take another break. I'm Joe Stajak. He's Josh Raybeck behind the glass, taking your calls at 610-632-0975. We're going to evaluate Howie Roseman and his draft picks since 2016, his draft classes. We're also talking about a sports moment that you can't actually believe, you still can't believe happened to this day. I'm Joe Stajak, 97.5 The Fanatic. All right, we're back. Show stays in the house. 9:45. I'm here till noon today. We've already gotten through 45 minutes. We haven't even really begun to talk about Howie's drafts yet because this topic has taken off. My phone has blown up, and I know the station Twitter site has blown up as well with answers to this question. What can you still not actually believe happened in sports in light of what's happening today? And I still can't believe this is happening, what's happening right now in our climate and our environment. And, you know, I call my kid, you know, I'm divorced. I see my kids every week, a couple times a week. But when I don't, I talk to them at night. What are you guys doing? What'd you do? What'd you do today? What'd you do tomorrow? And then I'm thinking, it's the same thing. They didn't do anything. They did their school online, and then they stayed home. It's the same thing. I call up a friend of mine, you know, what are you doing? What'd you do today? What are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. Nothing. And the answer is nothing. You ask me what I'm doing this afternoon, nothing. I'm watching Nova and Georgetown at 1 o'clock, the replay of that game. And then, I don't know, see what the wife wants to watch. She already went to Wegmans yesterday. Those are my big days out. I beg for her to give me an assignment. What do you need at Wegmans? Did we forget anything? Do we still need me to go around looking for yeast to make that bread? Maybe I'll go to Walmart and King of Prussia. Maybe they have it. Target didn't have it. Wegmans didn't have it. Giant, turns out Giant had it, believe it.
And how different is going to the grocery store right now?
Oh, it's much different.
Like, you have to mentally prep, like you're going into battle. You have to be alert. You're like, all right, I have to wipe down the cart. I have to use like
anything.
Yeah, I got to wash my hands.
It's crazy. I mean, it is crazy. It's just, there's nothing in the meat section. There was two packages, and they had two turkey drumsticks in each package. I don't eat turkey unless it's like Thanksgiving or maybe one other time during the year. I like drumsticks, not turkey drumsticks. I don't love them. It doesn't matter. There's no meat. There was no flour. Like I asked for, I go into Wegmans, I said this yesterday, I said, you guys have bread flour? Oof, 17B, you can try 17B. I said, if you don't have that, where's regular flour? Like, seriously? Oh, was that a serious question? Yeah, we don't have flour. We haven't had flour in 3 weeks. Oh, okay. I guess everyone, I mean, this is sports Armageddon. I guess everyone is kind of handling this as if it's Armageddon. It's not. And things will be back to normal at some point. I think it's going to be a while. I think the NHL and NBA seasons are probably done. That is my gut. I think they're done. At best, they will start up again in 60 days with a two-week end of the season. Maybe June 1st, around then. Maybe play two more weeks to end the season and then have a playoff system. And they might not have fans at it. That's what I'm thinking is best-case scenario. Because this thing is, we're in the infancy stage of this thing. This thing is just getting underway.
Could you imagine the Stanley Cup playoffs without fans?
Awful.
That'd be terrible.
Awful. I mean, I'm trying to imagine any of the sports with baseball. It's going to be bad, but it's quiet anyway until there's not a ton of spikes, you know, like, you know, fan spikes in baseball once in a while. But in basketball, it could be up and down action. You'll see spikes. In hockey, there'll be a hit, another hit, a save, a goal. You'll see some more spikes. So baseball's probably going to be the worst. But, yeah, I can't imagine that.
It's like, what's the point of a Game 7 then? It's just like, all right, there's just going to be a different logo at center.
That's it. I mean, yeah, that's it. It's going to be the weirdest thing if that's what we have to do. I got to be honest, though, Josh, with the option of doing nothing or that, I guess I'll take that. I'll take game seven with no fans. Right?
Yeah, if I have to take something, I'm taking that. Don't get me wrong. Somebody called up the other day, actually, and they said, well, you know what? This might be a blessing in disguise for the Flyers because you have the Bruins, the Lightning, and then over in the West, you have the Blues and the Avalanche. I'm like, yeah, but every time a team wins the Stanley Cup Finals, there were other contenders that you could point out.
Right.
You need to play it out. You need to get to the dance. And yes, you're going to have to beat good teams.
Right. Blues were aided last year, I believe, by the Blue Jackets knocking off the Lightning in four. I mean, took them right out of the equation. Here's what I like. Here's the question of the day was, what can you still not believe happened in sports? Give me a moment. Here's one I really like. Because we have a lot of Super Bowls, and I agree, and I'll get to that in a little bit. The Super Bowl was incredible, beating Tom Brady and with Nick Foles and that bunch. But here's one from Jeddert1, says, when Randy Johnson plucked that bird with a fastball. I am so with you on that, Jeddert1. That's a great one. The odds of that happening, and I explained this story a few months ago at the dinner table to my kids and my wife and whoever else was there. The odds of that happening were astronomical. Randy Johnson rears back and fires a fastball. If you haven't seen this, you have to see it. It's something like I've never seen. I never thought I would ever see. I will never see again. I guarantee that. A bird comes flying through the ball path at the exact moment that he releases the ball, and the bird explodes. I mean, the bird just explodes. It obliterates the bird. But the odds of that happening, how often do you see a bird fly through a low-flying bird in a baseball game anyway? Very rare. Once in a while, you'll see a squirrel running around or a fox or a skunk or something you'll see, and you'll see someone chasing it down. You remember the fog game in Buffalo with the bat in 1975 with the Flyers and the Sabres, something like that. But to hit that bird at that precise moment was unbelievable. I still think that the odds of that happening are probably more astronomical than any other answer you'll get today in sports. But I love that from Jeddert1.
He's probably the most intimidating pitcher of all time when you think about, like, actual, like, the stature, the way he used to sling it in there. You'd think, all right, the last thing I'd want to do is get hit with a Randy Johnson fastball. Enters the bird into the screen.
And it explodes. There's nothing left. There's nothing left of that bird. There's no crime scene. It's done.
Yeah, it's not like he flew into a window. No, he flew into a Randy Johnson fastball.
It exploded. It was just done. It was unbelievable.
It looked like if you ripped open a pillow and like the feathers and the contents just go everywhere.
Everywhere. Let's go to Brian in the Northeast on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Brian?
What's going on?
How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Working
a
little bit.
What you got today?
All right, my most shocking sports moment was the World Cup when Zidane headbutted Materazzi.
I like that one. That's a good one.
Around here, we're not as big soccer people, but that's almost Michael Jordan headbutting someone.
Explain that to the crowd. Explain the story.
Well, World Cup final. France is dominating Italy. If you watch enough soccer, unless Italy got lucky, they were losing that game. I don't know what Materazzi said to Zidane, who was the best player in the world, probably on most people's top 10 of all time, top 20 at least. He turns around and he headbutts him and gets ejected from the game.
Can you believe that? Can you believe he did that?
No, it was unbelievable. I mean, they were going to win. France was going to win. I'm an Italy fan. My grandfather's from Italy, so. But
yeah, me too.
Zidane was the best player. If he gets that World Cup, I mean, he's way more important as a player too, because he'd already won a World Cup and he'd already won a European Championship. And he'd won countless Juventus titles and Real Madrid titles and World Player of the Year titles. Like, he literally, that could be one of the bigger things in sports that ever happened to a player's career.
Oh, can you imagine if, like, Gretzky did that in the finals of a game, in, like, a game seven or something like that? I appreciate the call, Brian. It's a good one. That is a good one, the headbutt. That's just something you're just like, how does that happen? What happens in your brain when you're one of the best players in the world in a World Cup final game and you do that and you get tossed from the game? That's why I love sports, because I can talk about this subject all day long. I'm glad I threw it out there because I still love talking about it. I can talk about it every show, and I love talking about it with Josh. We talked about some games in between break. And I do have to take another break, but just the things that happen from time to time. I mentioned the Armando Galarraga perfect game that wasn't. How does that happen? There had only been at the time, I believe, 20 or 21. I can't remember if Roy Halladay's perfect game in Florida was before or after. I kind of thought it was before, but Armando Galarraga has a perfect game, and there's a grounder to first. He runs over because the first baseman goes off the bag to track down the ball. It was an easy grounder, and throws over to Galarraga, who's covering first. This would have been the 27th out. It wasn't even bang bang. It wasn't like, oh, it's a bang bang play. I can see where you can maybe get that wrong. It wasn't even close. He was so out, and Jim Joyce, the umpire, calls him safe. Blows a perfect game for the kid, and there's so few of them. It's not even like a no-hitter. No-hitters, they don't happen all the time, but there's like, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 a year. Maybe that's too much, but, I mean, perfect games. We're talking maybe 25 in the history of the game. In the history of the game. And he gets stripped of a perfect game because Jim Joyce, for some reason, blows that call, and it wasn't close. 610-632-0975. Keep the tweets coming, folks. I appreciate them all. I'm here till 12 o'clock. I'm Joe Stazak. Let's Bowen from The Inquirer coming up in about 10 minutes on 97.5. The Fanatic coming right back. Welcome back to the show. 10:01 here at 97.5 The Fanatic. Good morning, Philadelphia. Happy Sunday morning to you. March 29th, 2020. Sports Armageddon Day 13. It continues. I still can't believe what is happening is happening. And that's kind of the story behind the question of the day is, what can you still not believe happened in sports, a moment. We've gotten a lot of good ones. We have gotten the bird that Randy Johnson hit with a fastball that exploded. My goodness, my Twitter page is blowing up. What else do we have here? We have this is a Super Bowl, obviously. Nick Foles beating Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, backup quarterback, winning 3 straight playoff games. I like this one. He doesn't even have to really explain this one. This is from Clint Richardson. Oh, no, this is one he says he likes a tweet you were mentioning, but there was one at the very beginning of the show. It just said, bounce, 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 bounce. I think we all can remember that one. Happened last year in Kauai. Can't believe that happened. Can't believe that dropped. I couldn't believe it dropped when it actually happened. I couldn't believe it when I saw that.
Don't you feel like it was a little bit of karma? How much we were celebrating the double doink against the Bears in the playoffs, and we're like, yes, the double doink. Luck's finally on Philadelphia's side.
We got ours.
And then it came back our way.
We got ours. No way does he hit that shot, especially when it first bounced off the rim. I'm looking, I'm like, that didn't, like, it didn't go sideways, it didn't go forward, it didn't go backwards. It went high up, and I'm like, in the milliseconds that it's happening, the second bounce, I thought we were in trouble. Because I thought that was going to go in off the next bounce. Turns out 2 bounces later it goes in, which was just incredible. Here's one. I can't remember this kid's name. It was Chris. Was it Chris Thompson? Chris Johnson? Chris Chris Davis. Oh, Chris Davis, because I just got a tweet from Matthew Delente. He says, Auburn returning the field goal for a touchdown against Bama last seconds of the game in 2011. He believes 2011. It was something like that. Yeah, Alabama's kicking to win the ball game, and it's such a big rivalry, Alabama and Auburn, especially when both are good. And the kid, defensive back, Chris Davis, is back there. And, you know, because the kick could have been short, it was that long of a kick. It was like a 57-yard attempt. Davis catches it at the goal line, takes it down the left sideline for a touchdown. See, that's the kind of, those are the kind of answers that I love. Things that, okay, I remember that, and I still can't believe that happened. And imagine if you're a Bama fan watching that game, you're watching Chris Davis run down the sideline untouched, basically untouched. Basically untouched. Unbelievable. Let's go to Rose in North Philly on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Rose?
Hey, what's going on, Jeff?
How are you?
I'm doing all right, you know, trying to get through this trying times in our country.
Crazy, isn't it?
Very crazy.
Crazy.
But I got a sports moment that, you know, you probably forgot about it. Bill Romanowski spinning, is that J.J. Stokes? That was him in his face during the game?
Was it J.J. Stokes?
I think it was J.J. Stokes. I'm thinking
you might be right about that. Yeah, I remember that. See, the reason that doesn't surprise me is because Bill Romanowski was nuts. But yeah, it was bad.
I heard it was bad. He was on roids, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was on steroids real bad.
Yeah, he was. He was.
And I remember. It was Monday Night Football.
Oh, he used to do. It was J.J. Stokes. That's a good call, Rose. Yeah, he used to break fingers at the bottom of piles. You know what I mean? He was nuts. Bill Romanowski was nuts.
He played here for a while, didn't he?
He did. He was an Eagle for a while, yeah.
Did he play for Ray Rhodes? Was it Ray Rhodes?
I think he played for Ray Rhodes. Yes, yeah, I think you're exactly right. Played for Ray Bob, back in the late 90s. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Oh, that's fantastic. No, I love it. I appreciate it, Rose. Hope you're doing well. We have Les Bowen coming up in a few minutes. We'll actually talk about a little Eagles, a little NFC East. Harold Jensen coming up at 10:30, but this topic is kind of taking over. Things you can't believe, still can't believe happened in the world of sports. The Super Bowl, I'm getting a lot of tweets about the Super Bowl. Steve Kors says that the Eagles lost an NFC championship game to the Bucks at home with a 10-point lead after the first quarter. I didn't think they led 10-0. I thought they led 7-0 after Deuce's touchdown. I didn't think they had a 10-point lead in that one. I have been wrong before. It's possible. I think that would have hurt more if I would have remembered if it was a 10-point loss, because they only scored 10 points in the game. If you recall, they lost 27-10 that day. And people blame it on the Donovan, the Rondé Barber interception, the pick six. They were already down. What was the score? It was 20. They were already down 10 points. So they still needed two scores.
Yeah, they were down 10-7 at the end of the first.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they were down. So they were down 10-7 because Brad Johnson, Joe Juravicius, remember Barry Gardner still chasing him down the left sideline? Remember that? Yeah, it was a 7-0 lead. I think Deuce scored on the second or third play from scrimmage. Place went nuts. The place was shaking. And they weren't able to come up with a victory. But they were down 10 points when he threw that pick six. It wasn't like they were down 7. And, you know, you're driving for a game-tying touchdown. They were down 10. You still needed two scores. You just got the feeling. See, I got the feeling in that game that pick six was just, okay, that was the final nail in the coffin. But you got the feeling they weren't scoring twice the rest of that game. They just weren't. Maybe they punch something in there or kick a field goal there because they were getting down into range to punch the ball in, but they hadn't done much the whole game. They had 10 points the whole game. That Bucks defense was nasty. Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, Rondé Barber. Remember that crew? Joe Juravicius, Keenan McCardell. He had a touchdown at the end of the half. Brad Johnson. Or no, was that the Super Bowl? He had a touchdown. I can't remember. But that team, that was cold. Last game at the vet, big return off the opening kickoff, then Deuce breaks one, runs it in for a touchdown. You figure, oh, this is it. This is their year. They're going to the bowl. They would have had to play the Raiders, kind of an upstart team with Rich Gannon, John Ritchie, that whole squad. probably would have won a championship that year. But you never know. Hey, Bucks were a better team. Bucks were a better team that game. Simple as that. Bucks were better. What are you going to do? It's not like you turned the ball over five times like the Raiders did to Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl, or the Giants did to the Ravens in the 2000 Super Bowl. They were better. Sorry. You can only muster up 10 points against a team in a playoff game. You're not going to win many games. They mustered up three in the NFC title game against Carolina at home as well. All right? You're not going to win many games. 3 points, 10 points. Got to do better than that. Needed wide receivers at the time. Didn't get over the hump until they got T.O. in the house. And a man we're going to talk a little wide receiver with right now. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. Beyond Fast, Les Bowen from the Philadelphia Inquirer. How are you, Les?
I'm doing just fine, Joe. How about you?
Oh, I'm tremendous. Good to hear from you. Just real quick, like, what are you doing these days? Like, how often do you get out to do Eagles work?
Well, I don't, you know, in that sense, my life isn't changed that much because this time of year, you always work from home anyway.
Right, you know? Okay, gotcha.
And, of course, the NFL is the only sport that's really doing what it normally does. So there's been free agency and the draft to write about, you know, through all this. My life otherwise is very different. You know, usually even if I'm working from home, I can go to the gym, to a restaurant or something.
Right.
You know, pretty much walking the dog and working and watching Tiger King on Netflix. That's kind of my entire existence
just,
right now.
Just watched that whole series the other night. What'd you think of Tiger King? Have you watched the whole thing yet?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I've never been to Oklahoma, and I'm just going to assume that that's what everybody there is like. I just can't imagine, you know, I, for part of the series, my theory was that these people were really actors and this was all kind of like fake documentary.
Right.
And then I was kind of forced to acknowledge that these were indeed real people and this really happened. And, oh my God.
Oh my God is right. That's about the only thing you can say. Oh my God. If you watch that, it was, yeah, it lived up to the hype that surrounded it, at least from the, people that were talking to me about it. It was, it's pretty wild stuff. All right, so you know, the only things that we've been really talking about as well have been the draft, or not the draft necessarily. We have been speculating, but free agency so far. Eagles picked up a nose tackle from Pittsburgh, 3 years, $39 million for Hargrave, and they also picked up Darius Slay from the Detroit Lions for a couple of picks. They did some other things. They moved Jalen Mills to safety and some other things that weren't no big splashes except for the two that I just mentioned. Let's talk about the defensive tackle first. Now, they brought in Malik Jackson last year. They brought in another nose tackle this year because he got hurt. Are we lauding Howie for these moves, or is he just trying to make up for previous mistakes? Because I remember Jackson came in because Jernigan had been hurt a lot.
Right. Well, that's the thing. They keep trying to, Joe, they keep trying to get somebody who can really turn Fletcher Cox loose, who's a compliment to him that teams will have to really honor and allow Fletcher to be a really dominant, not that he's not dominant, but a real, like, extraordinary force. Excuse me, the dog is climbing on me here.
That's okay.
I don't know what she has in mind, but anyway, maybe she wants to talk. I'm not sure. They really want that strong interior pass rush that is so crucial in the NFL today, and especially the way they play defense. They don't really concentrate on blitzing or anything like that. They want to get the strong push with the front four, and this is yet another attempt to sort of turbocharge that effort.
What did you think of the Darius Slay trade? I mean, indications were they wanted Byron Jones. He signs with Miami.
Right.
So they make a trade with Detroit. They give up a couple picks, and they had 10, so they had a couple to move,
right.
I guess. They pick up Darius Slay, give him a nice contract, and now it at least appears that they have. You see, I'm not going to go so far to say they have a shutdown corner yet, because Byron Maxwell was here once. Nnamdi Asamoah right. was here once. I've been down this road before. What do we think of Darius Slay?
Well, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. I mean, Darius Slay is a competent NFL corner. He did have a bad year last year. Detroit overall had a bad year last year. I don't quite know what to make of that. But I kind of looked at it in terms of the situation they were in. They set their sights on Byron Jones. They couldn't get Byron Jones. The bidding went astronomical on him. And from that point, what do you do? Well, the best move they could make was to trade for Darius Slay, I think. I mean, I don't think there was any other, you know, you're not going to just magically get, you know, one of the top corners in the league
right.
on your team. So, you know, they got this guy. He's been in the Pro Bowl. He's a competent corner. He's better in press coverage, which they don't do a whole lot, but maybe they will. Who knows? I just think they had to do something, and this was after they didn't get Byron Jones. This was the best move available. Is it really a perfect move? Is Darius Slay going to solve all their problems? No, you know, but I think given the universe of, okay, we didn't get Byron Jones, now what do? I think it's better to do this than to have to think about trying to draft a corner in the first round instead of a wide receiver. And, you know, corners generally take a while to develop. There aren't a lot of rookie corners that just jump right in and sure. start dominating. So, you know, I just think they probably will draft a corner at some point, you know, maybe fairly high, but this takes a little bit of pressure off the draft, and it, you know, it gives them a guy that for the next couple of years ought to be able to hold down one side of the field and not be a disaster, not give up 40-plus yard catches, you know, right and left,
sure.
as has been the case here lately.
Les Bowen on the Comcast Business Hotline. Les, you mentioned drafting cornerbacks in 2017. In the second round, the Eagles took Sidney Jones. In the third round, they took Rasul Douglas. Neither took a snap in the playoff game last year.
Right.
Is this move to get Darius Slay somewhat of an indictment on the way they draft or have been drafting? Because Howie...
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was the deal. 2017 was the year, really. You know, they haven't had a great deal of draft resources in recent years because of trades they made largely to win the Super Bowl. They had 5 picks last year, 5 picks the year before. Before that, it had been 1989 was the last time they had as few as 5 picks. So, you know, in 2017, they went in with 2 corners, second and third round, and Sidney Jones, everybody felt like was really a first-round player who got injured, torn Achilles working out before the draft, and so he dropped to the second round. That should have solved their problem. You know, you use second and third round picks on corners, they should be able to play for you, and that is just not the case. Rasul is big and tough and durable, but he lacks speed. Sidney just never really panned out. He's kind of a really thin-framed guy who gets a lot of leg injuries and whose confidence seems at various points to really crater. The frustrating thing about that is, you know, the last couple games down the stretch, they had to throw Sidney in there with very little. People got hurt, you know, and he had to go in crucial situations, and he played well. And Jim Schwartz still wouldn't play him, you know, in the playoffs.
Right.
And I don't know what's going to happen there. I think there's a talent there that can still be redeemed, but I'm not sure Schwartz hasn't given up on him. So, you know, I just don't know what's going to happen. But that's the second and third round. Those guys have to be able to play, and it's a tremendous indictment of somebody there. This hasn't gone as planned.
Yeah, and they also, one of their glaring needs, obviously, was wide receiver at the end of the year, and they still haven't done a whole lot there. The talk was that they were in the mix, possibly, for DeAndre Hopkins, who went to the Cardinals for basically David Johnson and a second-round pick because they flopped. They flip-flopped fourth-round picks. What happened to the Eagles? Because it seems like it wasn't a big price tag to pay for DeAndre Hopkins. Was it just just a matter of that he wants a new contract and that he didn't want to pay him big money?
Boy, that's a really good question, Joe. We've gotten a couple different answers on that. I had heard initially that Hopkins wanted a new contract, but he had 3 years remaining on his current contract. So I'd heard initially the Eagles were worried that if they tore up a guy's contract with 3 years left and gave him a state-of-the-art, top-of-the-position deal, that every other good player on the team would look at that and say, hey, tear up my deal and give me, you know, top dollar at my position. I didn't like that explanation very much. I think, you know, you just tell them that this is a special situation. We had a chance to get this guy in a trade. You know, mm-hmm. we can win the Super Bowl now. You'll just have to be happy with that. I didn't like that too much. So when we actually got to talk to Howie Roseman this past week, it was more that what he was selling was it was more that the Texans were asking a different price from the Eagles than they eventually took from the Cardinals. And I had heard that Bill O'Brien really loved David Johnson and, you know, thought he was getting something really wonderful there. I'd also heard, you know, the rationale that because the Cardinals had a down year, the second round pick that he got was higher than the Eagles' second round pick would have been. And so the Eagles would have had to get their first round pick and blah, blah, blah. I still would have gotten it done. Howie kind of painted a portrait of, you know, without saying it directly, that he says this is the kind of deal where you end up calling the other GM and saying, hey, what happened here?
He said that, yeah.
And I get that. That happens sometimes in sports. You aren't responsible for the other guy being competent, you know? I mean, sometimes players get traded and you're thinking, what the heck?
What
if
the
they
heck?
Had really shopped that deal around the league, you know, somebody would have beaten that. But maybe O'Brien really had to have David Johnson. I don't know. But if I'm Howie, maybe I'm overrating DeAndre Hopkins. I don't watch him every day, but I know most people think he's the best wideout in the league. And if you give Carson Wentz the best wideout in the league, I think that solves a lot of problems. I would have gone harder after that than it seems like they did, Joe.
Yeah, I would have too. It's a shame. So here they are with pick 21 in the draft. The consensus is there are three guys that are the top three wide receivers in the draft, two from Bama and C.D. Lamb from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You might have to move up if you want one of them. If not, it's a target-rich environment in terms of wide receivers, so one's going to fall to you at 21, whether it's Denzel Mims or Justin Jefferson or whoever.
Yeah.
What do you think, what are you hearing that they're going to do? I mean, you would have to assume they're going to take a wide receiver here, right? And what would they do? Would they have to move up? Are they in love with anybody, or they just think that they're going to get a good one at number 21?
I would be inclined to think you're going to get a good one at 21. But, you know, it's a bad position to be in for everybody in the league to know you're going to draft a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because teams that want wide receivers then feel free to jump in front of you, or feel they have to, are motivated to jump in front of you. And then you end up with like the eighth best guy or something, you know. That's another thing that's puzzling here, Joe. They kind of went into free agency, from what Howie said last week, with the idea that the good wide receivers were going to get money right off the bat and that they weren't going to be in on those guys. And, you know, they might pick up something along the way, but they weren't going to be in the mix for the Robbie Andersons or the Rashad Perrimans. What happened was the Eagles, their priority, they got Hargrave, they traded for Slay, and they started looking for bargains after that. And Anderson and Perriman were still on the board because a lot of teams were looking at this wide receiver-rich draft and saying, eh, we can get a really pretty good guy and pay him a lot less money.
Sure.
You know, who's younger.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the Eagles hadn't planned for the contingency of these guys being available at a lower price, especially Perriman, who took a one-year deal for $8 million from the Jets, and that they weren't really in a position to jump into those. You kind of have to it's weird in the NFL. I don't think you just call up the agent one day and say, hey, we'll give so-and-so such and such. You know, you spend time through the process, through the combine, and in the weeks leading up, sort of letting the agents know that you're going to be interested in their guy. It's kind of like an auction. You know, you put your opening bid in, and then you follow what other people are bidding, and you know, it's hard to just jump in at the end and say, hey, we'll do this, you know, without having laid any of the groundwork. And it's kind of like they didn't lay any groundwork with these wide receivers, and they didn't get one. And while I understand that it's a wide receiver rich draft and they can draft a couple of them, certainly, you know, in the high rounds, it's still not a good position to be in. You know, Howie's talking up, you know, well, DeSean Jackson's healthy now. He's 33 years old.
Yeah,
He's talking up Ortega Whiteside, apparently was injured a lot last year. We never really, you know, that wasn't anything that seemed that important at the time. He's talking up, you know, well, you know, this happened and that happened. And it just all seems like they're sort of, I don't know, making excuses a little bit, but you know, it's disappointing in that you could have used somebody who was a really solid, reliable receiver with some miles left on him, even if he wasn't a superstar, just somebody who could kind of stabilize the position a little bit, you know, beyond the Greg Wards of the world, you know, somebody with a real track record, and they just didn't seem to prioritize getting that. They didn't think they could get it at a reasonable price. And you even see, like, DeMarcus Robinson signed back with the Chiefs this weekend.
Yes, he did.
At a minuscule price, you know, and I think he would be better than some of what they have, you know?
They don't have much.
A little bit better, you know? I mean, just to have out there to compete for a spot. But I guess you can still get guys like that. I mean, one thing we do have to remember is it's not all over. You know, you can continue to acquire players through free agency and trades and stuff, you know, for months and months. And we don't even know when the season is going to start or training camp or any of that.
Yeah.
So, you know. But, yeah, I think they kind of mishandled the whole wide receiver thing. It looks like right now anyway.
It's not very comforting to hear, Les, but it's always comforting to hear your voice and your information and your insights. We appreciate it, pal. Hang in there through these tough and challenging times, my man, and we'll catch up with you soon. I appreciate your time.
You too, Joe. It's good talking to you.
You too, Les. Thank you very much, my friend. Les Bowen, the awesome Les Bowen from the Philadelphia Inquirer. We've got to take a break. Harold Jensen coming up on the other side. We'll talk some of what Les just had to say after we deal with Harold Jensen and the Nova 85 team, the current team, and the current climate in the NCAA tournament and the men's basketball. But I do want to chime in on what Les had to say, because it's not very comforting, some of the things that I've heard from Les Bowen, who was on the scene and knows what he's talking about. I'm Joe Stazak, 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm here till 12 o'clock today. Stick around. Welcome back to the show. Joe Stazak in the house, 10:31 here at 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm here till 12. Les Bowen from the Philadelphia Inquirer was just on. Not very comforting, the things he had to say about Howie Roseman and how he's handled free agency so far. We'll get to that in a little bit. Harold Jensen from the 85 Villanova team coming on shortly. The question of the day was, what moments in sports can you still not believe actually happened? Go to Dean in Mount Airy. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Dean?
Hey, what's up, Joe? How you doing?
Good buddy. Hey, Harold Jensen on the Comcast Business Hotline right now, as promised. Harold, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing good, buddy. All things considered, right? We're fighting this fight together, aren't we?
It's crazy, man. Like I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad Carolyn and the kids are doing well, like you said, told me last night on via text. What are you doing to kind of fill the void that, you know, without any March Madness?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate on so many levels, right? First, you feel for everyone that's been affected. And for those that are on the front lines helping, and, you know, it's an amazing effort that's going on right now to support people. And we have to do our part. And I think that's what we're trying to do with so many others is, pay attention to, you know, the guidelines that are being set for us by, you know, by the governments, by the state, and, you know, by those that are trying to keep us all safe. So, you know, we've been, you know, doing some fun stuff, to when we can.
Like what? What you know, fun stuff are you doing?
Well, we've watched our share of movies, but
yeah, we've done that. Yep.
You know, we'd play some, you know, some games like 20 questions, you know, you kind of come up with a topic you know, so, we're trying to do some fun stuff like that. Everybody is, you know, we try and get outside every day for a little bit and just, you know, take a walk. I live close to Valley Forge Park, which is great. So I've been able to get over there, but unfortunately, you know, they're closing it down, I think now. So, you know, we'll do our best and again, try and just play the small role that you can, you know, as individuals to get past this.
What do you miss most, Harold? I know you're a sports fan. You're obviously a college basketball fan. March Madness, like, hurts me to the core. The next worst thing would be if the football season gets affected, but I understand there's more important things going on right now. But just from a standpoint, from a sports standpoint, what's affecting you the most?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously always loved March Madness, having been a part of it years ago. And
you have?
The excitement that it created.
You were?
Well, vaguely remember. It's been a while.
Hey, 35 years, man.
Yeah, holy cow. You know, you feel for the kids, the coaching staffs. I mean, there's so much effort goes into you know, doing what they do to prepare for this time of year and build towards this time of year. So it's, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking to see them not have that opportunity, you know, especially the kids around the country that won't have another senior season, for example. So that's really a tough thing to see. And I think, again, heartbreaking for so many of those out there. And you feel for those kids. It would be hard to imagine having gone through a season and all of a sudden say, hey, look, there's no postseason.
Right.
You know, how about the game that was going on in New York at the Big East tournament?
Mm-hmm.
And at halftime, I think it was St. John's and somebody that at halftime, they called the game.
Called it off. So, unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So it's unprecedented times. And, you know, I think for the entire sports world and sports fans, it's really hard. It's really hard. And, you know, can't imagine what it's like for the professional athletes too, you know, to have, you know, all of a sudden be going through this. So very, very different, unusual times. And I think in your text, you said just, you know, incredible challenges.
Yeah. Harold Jensen on the Comcast Business Hotline from the 85 National Championship Villanova team. Harold, do you think that some of these seniors should be granted another year of eligibility? It's been tossed around in conversation and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. But I mean, mm-hmm. you look at some of the kids that don't have an opportunity or didn't have an opportunity to finish out. And like you did, and like you look at Dayton, went 29-2, third in the country. They have no shot to do anything in the playoffs. And are the other sports too, not just, you know, men's basketball, but other scholarship kids. Do you think they should be granted another year?
No, it's a tough one. Obviously it would change the dynamic of the sports that they're involved with, you know, going into that next year. You hate to see it be taken away from them like this, but it's just such an unusual circumstance. My heart says yes. I think, you know, how could you take that away from kids? You know, maybe there would be a way to do it based on each sport's individual situation. For example, if you had not started a season, if there was a sport that was a spring sport in college and they had not started that season, you know, maybe to give them the chance to come back if they wanted to. I don't know. It's just a really difficult one. And you just feel for all the kids that are that are in the, on the unfortunate side of that situation. It's just very difficult.
Very difficult. Villanova 24-7 when things shut down. Had a pretty nice year. Sadiq Bey averaged 16 points a game as a sophomore. I believe next year would have been their year if you were asking me to, if, what year they'd make, you know, do some damage and make a run. If he stays around, I think that's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to stay around. What did you think of the team this year, and what do you think the outlook is for the team?
Yeah, you know, I love the way they developed. I mean, they played. I think they progressively got better, which is certainly characteristic of, you know, Coach Wright's teams. I think you saw some kids really start to shine, like Sadiq and Colin Gillespie. But they were getting contributions from a lot of the younger teams. Justin Moore had a terrific year. And, our Jeremiah Robinson Earl had a terrific season as well as a freshman. So I'd love to see him stay. I think, you know, if I was able to, you know, be in his ear for a minute, I think I would just suggest to him that, if you look back, over the last, let's say 8-10 years of Villanova players in particular, those that played 3 years, 4 years, have really done nicely at the next level. And, you know, I think I'd love to see him stay, and have, you know, have another, at least another season, have a third season with us. And I think he would benefit from it. I think he would continue to develop. I mean, I think their development, of student athletes is amazing. You can see it in the progression. You can see, you know, every time you turn on an NBA game now, you almost guaranteed to see a Villanova kid out there, which is really neat. Would love to have him back. And I agree with you that if he does come back, it would certainly be high expectations, that's for sure.
What kind of emotions does this time of year, I mean, this year is an exception, but normally evoke for you, because you were obviously one of the stars off the bench of that 85 team. And I always find it amusing that every year, and I watched last week, they showed the 2016 game again on CBS, where Nova beat Carolina on the last second shot by Chris Jenkins, and Phil Booth had an off-the-hook game, and Bill Raftery saying, hey, I remember there was another kid back in 85 who had an off-the-hook game off the bench named Harold Jensen. I mean, emotion. Do you still think that? I mean, that's pretty cool, man. People still remember you. 35 years ago, they remember your performance, man. That's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah. Everything is cool about it except the 35 years. It's an emotional time of year. I had a chance to speak with a number of our guys yesterday, and actually at 1 o'clock today, CBS is playing
the game again.
It's playing the game again.
Yeah. You're going to watch? Sure. You're going to watch, right?
So, for sure. We are, it's not something I watch often, actually. In fact, pretty seldom, but certainly on our minds this time of year in particular, and with the success of the program now, obviously even more so. And I think, for all of our guys, I think one, we feel incredibly fortunate, and blessed to have played together, played for a great coach in Rolly Massimino. And been part of something that was, you know, pretty special and pretty unique in creating an upset, you know, like that in the tournament and in the championship game against Georgetown. So it's a very emotional time of year for us. And again, I think we just feel really blessed that we were part of it.
Yeah, me too, my friend. We appreciate all you did. And, you know, when we did that piece, when I went to your house and did that piece on the 25-year anniversary, that was 10 years ago, dude. Now it's 35. You know, where'd that go?
I thought it was the day before yesterday.
My God, 35 years ago. Harold, great talking to you, man. Yeah. We appreciate you coming on. Enjoy the game today. I'll be watching as well. Hugs to Carolyn and the kids, and we'll catch up with you soon, pal.
Hey, I'm going to say a real quick get well to a dear friend, Jim Taylor, who's got the coronavirus. He's a dear friend. He lives down in Swarthmore, and just wishing him really well.
Okay, we'll do it. Appreciate that, Howard. Absolutely. Well wishes
thanks,
to Jim
thanks,
Taylor.
Thanks, buddy. And to everyone out there. Yeah, right. Thanks, Joe.
Too,
great talking to you, pal.
You too, pal. I'll talk to you later. Harold Jensen on the Comcast Business Hotline. We've got to take a break. Great stuff. He's the best. Game Nova Georgetown at 1 o'clock on CBS. And I will be watching. Harold will be watching. And I know some other Nova friends of mine will be watching the game. And we'll talk some Eagles on the other side, as well as things you still can't believe happened in sports. That was one of them. Nova beating Georgetown in 85. We'll talk about more. We'll talk a little bit more on that on the other side. I'm Joe Stazak here till noon. Steve Callis coming up at 11:10 on 97.5 The Fanatic. And I got Les Bowen on Howie Roseman, and I get all jazzed up when I talk to Harold. That was my era.
I'm happy.
Good job, Bernie. I was a freshman in 85 at Villanova. Harold was a sophomore. Of course, he was, you know, too big to talk to me on campus. He was, you know, big man on campus. Harold Jensen hit the game-winning shot with 2:35 left. Now, he's awesome. He's awesome. His wife is actually my nutritionist. Carolyn does a great job, great family. Just enjoy talking to him when March Madness rolls around again. And I will be watching the game at 1 o'clock, Villanova and Georgetown. I think that's cool what CBS does. Like yesterday, ESPN showed a marathon of baseball games, great baseball games of all time. I think that's a little tougher to sit there and watch a three-hour game where you know there's some excitement in there somewhere, or maybe like Jack Morris goes 10 innings in a Game 7 of the World Series. That was one of the greatest games I've ever seen, something like that. But the March Madness games are shorter. They cut out halftime, so you're really watching about an hour and a half of game, and it goes by fast. It's great. They have been replaying some of the great games. Again, I watched Virginia and Texas Tech. I watched Nova and Carolina last week. I'm going to watch Nova and Georgetown today. I think they have Carolina State and Houston coming up. They got a lot of good stuff going on. So there's something to do on a Sunday afternoon, a rainy Sunday afternoon here in the Delaware Valley. I know that's what I'll be doing when I get home. So we talked to Harold Jensen about the team. Sadiq Bey averaged 16 points per game as a sophomore this year for Villanova, helping them go 24-7. If he sticks around, God willing, I think they can make some damage, do some damage next year in the postseason. They probably could have done some damage this year. You never know with a Jay Wright coach team, and Colin Gillespie, a junior now, has taken over along the lines of Jalen Brunson and Ryan Arcidiacono. So Colin Gillespie, it's now Colin Gillespie's team, and he also had a great year. So I do miss it immensely. And right now we'd be down to six teams, and after today, we'd be down to six teams, and after today we'd be down to four teams. So the final four would be in place later today. Unfortunately, not. We are watching replays of great games of the past, which led me to my question today. Question of the day is, what moment in sports you still can't believe happened? We've had so many phenomenal responses. And I appreciate that, by the way, for folks who don't have the time to call in or are doing other things. I appreciate you tweeting the show. You can tweet me at Joe Stazak 975. What do we have? We have some new ones. We have Nick Foles out dueling Tom Brady for Super Bowl win and MVP honors from Doc Mello 267.
I think that word was key too, out duels.
He did.
Because it's different than just beats. And I know a lot of people go back and they'll say, oh, well, look at the stats and everything. No, if you look with your eyes, Foles was throwing into more contested coverage throughout that game, and there were quite a few underthrows Brady had where he had wide receivers behind everybody.
Yeah, because
coverage.
The Eagles had no coverage that day.
Exactly. Exactly.
He had 505 yards and lost by 8.
And even the Brandon Cooks play, most of that's on Brandon Cooks because he's running backwards, and obviously guys
that
running back.
That was a key play.
But when you watch like the All-22, and I don't mean to be the All-22 nerd.
No, that's fine.
But the camera catches up late where the Eagles player recovers and gets behind Cooks. actually, if Brady leads him, Cooks was behind everybody, that would have been an automatic touchdown.
Wow. You know what play I thought was key in the game? Since you mentioned Brandon Cooks, there was a play in the game in the first quarter where Cooks is in the right flat, catches the ball, and starts to run. And you could see what he's about to do. You know, it's become like in vogue to leap over a defender. You could see him taking his time. He's timing it, and he's about to leap over. And I think it was Jalen Mills. And he gets up to his helmet. So Jalen Mills' helmet's basically in his crotch, and he makes the tackle and he brings him down short of the first down. That was second down. They don't get it on third down because they're down deep. They're at the 12 yard line. They have to kick a field goal and they miss. There was a bad snap and Gostkowski misses. I thought that was a key play in the game. And one of those plays where you look back and say, that might come back to haunt you. And it certainly did. And then Brandon Cooks, you could see, when he catches the ball, when Malcolm Jenkins lays him out, he takes a quick look back to his left, and he doesn't see what's coming from his right. And Jenkins just, I mean, that's how valuable Jenkins was. Just that hit took Brandon Cooks out of the game. I'm not looking for people to get injured, but it was such a statement play by Malcolm Jenkins, and it just proves why he was one of the fiery leaders of this team. And he will be missed. He will be definitely missed. Jalen Mills now taking his spot at safety. What'd you think about that, Josh? Now, Jalen Mills, why all of a sudden have we named Jalen Mills a safety? I mean, he was a cornerback, and it wasn't like he's getting that old. Why all of a sudden is he now the safety, and we still don't know who the other cornerback is?
I think one of the reasons was because of him being beat on the double moves, and they say, well, he is one of the better tackling corners on the team.
He is a good tackler.
So he does make the transition a little bit better. And I also think they want somebody to play the Malcolm Jenkins role where when you get into the red zone, this is where, okay, you're going to have to play some in the slot as well, play a little bit of that role. I personally would have liked to also seen Rasul Douglas. I'm still on board with that just because I think he is a good coverage player come red zone time. Now, when there's a lot of green behind him,
you are right about that.
He gets beat and everything, but I think he would like, because everyone's going to bring up when you face Ezekiel Elliott, when you face Saquon Barkley, if you see Jalen Mills end up in the box, you can see him getting run over by one of those two running backs. Sure. Whereas maybe if Rasul Douglas adds on an extra 10, 12 pounds, maybe he fits a little bit better.
I agree with you. No, I totally agree with you. Jalen Mills is a good tackling cornerback. He does get beat on that double move. We're going to find out what he does at safety and what role Rasul Douglas has left for this team. He's played in 18 games, 5 interceptions since 2017. Again, to me, it's an indictment on Howie Roseman when he drafted Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas back-to-back in 2017. That was supposed to be Lito and Sheldon 2.0. Neither got a snap. Jim Schwartz thought so much of those two players that neither got a snap in the Seattle playoff game. That tells you a lot, and it is a direct indictment on Howie Roseman. We'll indict him some more on the other side, because I still want to get back to what Les Bone was talking about from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He was on about an hour ago. And we'll also talk a little NCAA hoops, and we'll wax nostalgic a little bit. Back to 85, Steve Callis coming on at 11:10 to break down a lot of things, and we'll have some fun in the next hour. And then who's up at 12? D-line him up at 12? D-line him up at 12, 12 to 4, I believe, today. I'll get you the lineup when I come back. But Joe Stajak, all you need to know right now is I'm here till noon on 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Fanatic.
All right, we're back. I guess the microphone situation kind of worked itself out because I've stayed here in the Mike Missinelli throne. Getting it done. We're here till noon today. Steve Callis coming on in about 10 minutes. We had Harold Jensen on. We had Les Bowen from the Inquirer on. We've had, it's been fun. All I know is I've had fun. I hope you've had fun. I know Josh Raybeck seems to be having fun back there. We haven't even really gotten to like the meat of what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to grade some of the drafts that Howie has had and be fair, because sometimes we criticize too early a draft class. Like last year's draft class, we tried to grade it when it happened. We're going to do the same thing. I'm going to do the same thing in 2020 and next month. But is it fair? I mean, we do it because we do it. It's all speculation. But in hindsight is when you can really tell if a draft class panned out or not. You know, it's like doing postgame or pregame. You do a pregame show, you're speculating. You do a postgame show, you're analyzing. That's why I always requested to do the Eagles postgame show. I like to analyze more than speculate. Speculate, you're just throwing things out there and you're thinking, you're predicting. That's fine. It's all fun. That's all fun and well and good to do. I like to break down things that have already happened. So we were talking to Les Bowen. I wasn't very comforted by what he said about Howie Roseman and the indictment. I mentioned that, I mentioned the Darius Slade trade that the Eagles made last week for a third and a fifth round pick. They picked up cornerback Darius Slade. Didn't have a great year with the Lions last year. Still got a few good years left on the tires. Signed a new deal. And he is now the highest paid corner in the league, I believe, per annum, even over Byron Jones. So they had to do that. Why? Because in 2017, they drafted in the second round Sidney Jones, and in the third round, Rasul Douglas. Those were supposed to be, as Josh Rabick astutely pointed out, they were supposed to be Bobby and Troy 3.0, right? Is that right? Because Lito and Sheldon should have been Troy and Bobby 2.0, and then you have your Bobby and Trey 3.0.
Yeah, good Eagles corners seem to come in pairs, so that's what we were expecting.
Yeah, well, it didn't. And again, there's no bigger indictment over those two selections in the second and third round in 2017. And there has been enough time to evaluate. You may say give Sidney Jones one more year because he was still rehabbing that torn Achilles last year. Okay, fine. But I think you can see what you can see. You know, your eyes tell you what they tell you, and you've seen some flashes here and there, but not enough. I'll give him another year. Fine. I mean, what else do I have to do? I'll give him another year. Rasul Douglas has played in 18 games, has 5 interceptions. He is a ball hawk, but maybe not quite made for. He's kind of a tweener, I think. He's kind of a tweener between cornerback and safety. I don't think he's fast enough to be a corner that they need. They need speed on this team. I mean, they need speed. Simple as that. Look what Kansas City did in terms of making their offense that much faster. Travis Kelce, obviously the best tight end in the league, I think, even over George Kittle, Zach Ertz, due respect, fast, speed. They went out and drafted Tyreek Hill in the 5th round. Okay, for all the things that Andy did poorly around here, and I've blasted him incessantly, He's made some good picks in Kansas City, and he's turned that program around. And of course, he won a Super Bowl, and he deserved to win a Super Bowl. I mean, he did it without Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt was a great pick in the third round, but he had the domestic abuse situation in that hotel. They cut him immediately. He signed with the Browns. I'm not sure where he is now, but you know, they still won a Super Bowl without him. Tyreek Hill. They just signed DeMarcus Robinson to a 1-year deal, and this is what Les Bowen was talking about. There were still some receivers out there, even when, you know, most of the crop dried up, and you thought, well, Breshad Perriman and Robbie Anderson might have been too expensive a couple weeks ago. Well, you know, Breshad Perriman got a 1-year deal for $8 million from the Jets. You don't think he could have looked good in Eagle Green here, in Midnight Green, with his speed? They need speed here. Plain and simple, on offense and on defense, they need speed. That's why Henry Ruggs, he's not all that tall. The kid from Alabama probably won't get him unless they trade up. He'd be a guy that I'd be okay with, okay? He doesn't have great size, but he has speed. Tyreek Hill has speed. You can see what Tyreek Hill does when he's healthy for that team.
How ridiculous is that watching the Chiefs, too? How it's Hill, Robinson, Hardman. Like, whoever goes down, it's like someone, even though they can't fill it to the Tyreek Hill level, somebody at least steps in there and is at least filling that speed role, whereas Deshaun went down and it just kind of seemed like a lost cause then.
I didn't even mention Hardman. That's a good call. I forgot about Hardman. The speed they have on that team, I mean, that was just the way to go. And that's what Andy has done. He's put together a very fast team. And you can tell the level that they play at is so much different than the level the Eagles play at. And it basically comes down to speed. They don't have speed. They have DeSean Jackson. He's 33 years old. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing Howie try to kind of apologize and kind of try to put a spin on it. Well, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was injured a lot of the year last year. Okay, he played in every game. Played in every game, started five games, played in every game, caught 10 balls. DeSean Jackson basically played in one game and one series of another game. He caught 10 balls. All right, and he helped win a game for them. So as much of a disaster as it was, because that was basically all DeSean did, at least he contributed and helped them win one game and did get them into the playoffs. You have Alshon Jeffrey, a cancer in the locker room, maybe. I don't know. Howie keeps talking about, well, yeah, he knows what people are saying about him. What is he talking about? Is he talking about because of his Liz Frank injury and because his numbers have declined? Or is he talking about because he was the anonymous source that everyone believes that came out and spoke poorly about Carson Wentz? So you have that going for you at a bad contract. And you have Greg Ward, who was on a practice squad, played seven games last year, did an admirable job. Very admirable job. I need not point to anything else but that catch over Josh Norman with 26 seconds left in the Redskins game late in the season that helped this team continue to win games to get them into the playoffs. He contributed, but that's all they have. Robbie Anderson signed a two-year deal with Carolina for $20 million, $10 million a year. Much cheaper than he was going to be a couple weeks ago. So, and you can't get DeAndre Hopkins done? Do it. If you needed to give up that 21st pick, do it. I can't believe, and this is, again, this is coming from Howie speak, so he's obviously not going to indict himself. But he said, well, they wanted something else. They wanted something from Arizona. They wanted a different price tag from us. Well, what was it? Because they didn't get much from Arizona unless they're really in love with David Johnson, who hasn't had a great year in about 3 or 4 years. Let's go to Mike in King of Prussia on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Michael?
Hey, how you doing?
All right, man.
Good. You know, finally, I don't sound like I'm just some psychopath calling in all the time, because less gives you credence and like credibility in what I've been saying like for at least a year now. And I'd like to say I'm like the first caller on the scene that's been complaining about Howie. So
yeah, you have been. You've been all along. You've been on the anti Howie bandwagon. I'm with you too, bro. I'm totally with you.
And it's just, here's my thing with it, right? I want to be wrong on this, right? I don't want to be right saying that Howie's so bad that he's detrimental to our team's future, because I want the Eagles to do well. But I've got to call this out. I've got to shine a light on it, that this guy has gotten away with tanking drafts and using free agency to cover his mistakes for way too long. And this year, he didn't even think he had to use free agency to cover his mistakes. He just thought, you know what? I'm not going to bring in any receivers, and what I get in the draft will be good enough. And it also leads me to really wonder about the psyche of our quarterback, right? Because the way they were just trying to spin it, that they want to bring people in that kind of work with Carson Wentz, right? Well, how fragile is our quarterback psyche that he can't deal with an established player? Like, he has to hold dominion and sway over what they do. Like, that bothers me. And I'm also bothered by the fact that as a city, we used the last four games of the season that we got into the playoffs with as a barometer that Carson Wentz has turned some corner. I just want to remind everybody that we beat the Giants, who were hapless, twice, and one of those was a dogfight game. The Redskins, who took us to the wire, and a falling apart Cowboys team that mentally wasn't there. And that's how we got into the playoffs. So everybody makes it seem like we beat like four playoff bound teams. None of the teams we beat to get into the playoffs made the playoffs. So there's a lot of things that cause me a lot of concern, like how fragile like Carson Wentz is with, you know, he has to be the guy and you can't bring any other established receivers in because that affects how Carson Wentz will play. That Howie Roseman can't identify any speed position. There's a lot of things that make me very nervous for the future of this team.
I don't blame you, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. I got to go. I got a guest on the line. I'm with you. I can't say anything against what Mike just said from King of Prussia, because Les Bowen pretty much solidified everything I've been saying or speculating about, and it's an indictment on Howie Roseman. They still don't have a new wide receiver in here to speak of. And is it over? No, free agency is not over technically, but anyone out there you want to sign? Anyone out there look like somebody that can help this squad significantly? So what are you going to plan on your first round pick not being one of the top three guys? That's fine. Let's say you get a Denzel Mims from Baylor, Justin Jefferson from LSU, fine. Is he going to step in right away? Is he going to be a DK Metcalf? Is he going to be able to step in right away and be an impact guy for this team? Is he going to take snaps from Arthiga Whiteside? Is Arthiga Whiteside done? Are we going to see development? Are we going to see a big leap from 10 catches in 16 games 1 year to the next? I don't know. But to sort things out, I always bring in my go-to guy, Steve Callis from Callis Remarks, my podcast partner. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline right now. Steven, how are you, my friend?
All good, Joe. Great to be with you, as always.
You too. I know you've been listening to the show. I always appreciate that. You help ratings. You heard Les Bowen on about an hour ago talking about the DeAndre Hopkins situation, and I think you and I talked about it on the podcast. If that was the price tag, you can't tell me that you could not have gotten something done for DeAndre Hopkins unless you're just afraid to pay him big money because he wants a new contract. But I say, get Carson Wentz some help because he needs some. What do you say?
100% agree. I mean, this guy is a guy you have to overpay for. There are just some players you have to overpay for, and I think DeAndre Hopkins is one of them. I don't think there's more quarterbacks aside. There's probably not 10 in the league, but he's one of them. And the notion that he could be catching passes from Carson Wentz to immediately make them arguably the favorite, certainly the co-favorite, because I still think Washington's down. I still think the Giants are down. You never know with Dallas. They finally got rid of their coach. If he's the problem, then they might be really, really good. But, you know, the Eagles are the Eagles. They still have some Super Bowl pedigree on that team. And I think it was a big mistake hoping you're going to get someone at 21 when you could have had DeAndre Hopkins. Yes, you would have had to overpay for him. And I don't mean from what they got from the Cardinals. I don't mean from a trade perspective. I mean from a salary perspective.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lost opportunity.
Lost opportunity. And I have been saying that the Darius Slay trade, they made that because of the failed picks they've had previously, especially in 2017 when Sidney Jones hasn't been able to pan out. Neither has Rasul Douglas. Neither took a snap in the playoff game against Seattle, so they had to go out and make a trade now. They had to give up a couple picks for it. To me, it's an indictment on Howie Roseman not being prepared and not being able to. Whoever's making the picks over there, because Howie's the GM, so he is, you know, the target's on his back. But right. whoever's doing it over there needs to do a lot better.
I totally agree. I'm a little different from Les Bowen, who's great, but I think Darius Slay is a lot better than he intimated that he is. You know, we did those stats from ESPN probably 3-4 weeks ago now on your show, where he was the third best corner in football behind Marlon Humphreys and Stephon Gilmore in terms of covering guys, allowing only a 52% completion rate. That was third best in the NFL last year.
Mm-hmm.
And against Pro Bowl receivers, it was down to 50% completion rate. So that means something. I'm not into all the crazy stats of nowadays, but that in and of itself, when you're talking about in the same breath with Stephon Gilmore, it seems to me you're really good. And he's been good for a long time. I understand if you're playing in Detroit and the whole Matt Patricia thing, again, another Belichick coach who wants to be Belichick, not quite working out for him. But I think he's better than people know, and of course we're just going to have to wait and see, but I think he really solidifies their secondary that's had a lot of moving parts for the last few years.
Certainly have. Now let me ask you something, Steve, because this is a terrible thing that's going on right now, this pandemic.
Yeah.
We know that. I feel guilty putting a positive spin on it, but in terms of sports, for what we do and what we talk about, the fact that the Dallas Cowboys have a new coach in Mike McCarthy. The Giants have a new coach in Joe Judge. The Washington Redskins have a new coach in Ron Rivera. Without having any time, if there's not a lot of time to get ready for next season, that's a really difficult task to get your team ready to go when you are a new head coach into a new franchise. And to me, that tells me that the Eagles would be, you know, light years ahead of the other three teams if this continues to go on up leading up till September. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Eagles have a big advantage. You're right. Just from a constant perspective or a fluid perspective, obviously, look, this is just being blunt. I don't think it matters who coaches the Washington team. I don't think it matters who coaches the Giants. You know, Joe Judge, another Patriots guy who already seems to have taken that hard approach, for lack of a better term. And again, you kind of like the theory. The theory is, I learned under Belichick, I'm going to put in the Belichick system. But none of these guys are Belichick. In fact, I think the two best guys are going to be guys who are just starting their coaching careers now. Mike Vrabel at Tennessee, of course. Also a former Patriot player, not just a coach.
Right.
And Flores down in Miami, I mean,
great.
He was like a miracle worker.
Been great.
First two games, he was the biggest embarrassment in the history of football, and he just kept his head down working hard. And, you know, a lot of people think he's going to be a great coach, and Miami has done a lot this year. And with no Tom Brady in the AFC East, you don't know what's going to happen there, but we'll see who they get to be quarterback down in Miami. But I think those guys, generally speaking, have problems trying to be Belichick. And so I don't think Washington and the Giants, I mean, you're right, it's going to be hard to implement the system now when you can't even get 10 guys in a room. It's, you know, illegal, essentially. And I think, as usual, it's going to be the Cowboys and the Eagles, or at least for the last few years, that's what it's been. And I think, even on that matchup, even though the Cowboys finally got rid of Jason Garrett, who of course shows up as what, the Giants offensive coordinator,
yep,
I think.
Yep.
So I think they have an advantage even there. Although, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be saying when the season opens, it's addition by subtraction. Anybody, Mike McCarthy, you know, you're right. He's the new coach of Dallas, but he's kind of an old coach, if you will, for all those years at Green Bay. So we'll see if he can actually turn them around, because they certainly are talented. But they've always been talented, as you know.
Yes, they have. But they did lose Byron Jones, Robert Quinn, Malik Collins. Witten's like 100 years old, but they lost Randall Cobb. So we'll see. We'll see what Dallas has to bring, and we'll see what advantage this pandemic, this unfortunate situation, gives the Eagles. But I wanted to talk a little college basketball, because I know you heard Harold Jensen on. I usually bring him on every year around this time. We talk about the current team. We talk about the past team. We talk about the 85 team. What do you remember from 85? Because this is the 35th anniversary of that game where they beat Georgetown in Lexington, Kentucky on April 1st, 1985.
Well, I think it's a misnomer to say this is one of the greatest upsets in the history of college basketball. I'm sure you know firsthand, because you were there, that they lost to him in overtime early in the year,
mm-hmm,
by two.
Yep.
And then later in the year, they lost by seven. So I'm not saying I expected them to win. Of course, I didn't. But I think what Villanova did was they played the perfect game. That's why when you watch it today, and I sent my son a text, I'd like him to watch it. I think what they did was they played the perfect game. They shot 77% or whatever it was. And it seemed like every time Georgetown thought they had an answer, Villanova had an answer for their answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, while it was one of the greatest college games ever played in terms of Villanova's preparation and execution, I did not view it to be a stunning, incredible upset, because they had played them twice tough during the regular season. The other thing I wanted to tell you about was, I think Steve Lapis was the first year assistant there.
He was.
And Steve Lapis is a guy who coached Rod Strickland at Truman High School in the Bronx. And that's how he got the job at Villanova, because Rod Strickland, of course, was a god in high school and eventually went on to the NBA, as you know. And Steve Lapis and I actually grew up in the same neighborhood. He grew up on 181st and Pinehurst Avenue, and I grew up on 200th Street and Sherman Avenue. We're both Greeks. We both went to the same church. We played for 6 years as the backcourt in the Greek League. We were the Greek League backcourt. You probably know that Lap played for Floyd Lane at City College, who was a legendary coach.
I do know that.
And so he had parlayed that into being an assistant. I think that was his first year at Villanova. And then eventually he went on to, you know, coach Manhattan.
Totally
revitalized that program.
Yeah.
And then, you know, had a lot of pros, was a great recruiter, had a lot of pros at Villanova. Didn't have quite the success I think we all expected him to have in the tournament, but overall was a very successful coach. And I think he's still, I'm hoping they have him on the I think he still does work for CBS, and I'm hoping they have him on this telecast because obviously he was a, you know, first person participant in the whole thing. So I'm hoping that's part of, I assume they're going to go back to the studio for some analysis, and I sure hope they have him because, you know, he's a bright guy, hardworking guy, and he had a heck of a coaching career in college basketball.
He was one of the first guys to hug Raleigh, if you watch after the game, the shot of the celebration. He was one of the first ones to hug Raleigh after the championship game. Hey, buddy, I threw out the question today because of this crazy situation that we're in. A sports moment that you still can't believe happened, and it really blew up my Twitter page and the station's Twitter page, and I know you have some comments or some answers for us, so what are they?
Yeah, I got two. I've heard most of the show, not all of it, but most of it. And I don't think anybody's mentioned what to me is the most obvious, which is the U.S. beating Russia in 1980 in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was really a stunning upset, impossible, couldn't happen in a million years. And I think we talked about it, you know, that they had, the Russians had beaten that same Olympic team 10-3 at Madison Square Garden 2 weeks before the Olympics, and it wasn't even that close. So I thought that was, and still think that's the greatest upset in the history of sport. The only other one I've ever thought of that compares, and I hate to go individual sports, but it's when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson, and people forget in that fight, Mike Tyson knocked Buster Douglas down.
Yeah, he was down.
And he got up off the canvas and beat Mike Tyson. I think he was a 42-1 underdog, and you know that was low. I thought he should have been like a 200-1 underdog. But those are the two, certainly in my lifetime, that were the most incredible things I've ever seen from an upset perspective. And I guess in game, the one I would go back to, because I was there with my son, the Patriots fan. Poor parenting on my part.
And bad job.
Was there, they were down 28-3, and we were in the stadium when they were down 28-3 in the third quarter to Atlanta. And I have to give the Patriots fans credit, needless to say I'm not one, but they didn't really lose faith. And once that, you know, snowball started rolling down the hill, it was just incredible. And as you know, when they won the coin flip, you knew the game was over. You know they were just going to go down in overtime and score a touchdown. So that's the most incredible in-game comeback I can remember. I know there were more point differential comebacks, Frank Reich and all of that, but this was in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And as I told my son after the game, when we were booing Roger Goodell off the dais because that was the year, you know, Brady got four games, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as I told him, you'll live to be 100 and you'll never see anything like this as long as you live.
As long as you live, because it wasn't like they started the comeback in the second quarter. It was about 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Unbelievable stuff. Someone actually did mention that, but great job by you as usual, my friend. Hey, great talking. Enjoy the game. I know you'll be watching it today, and we'll catch up soon, and we'll do a lot of fun things this week and then have our podcast next Friday on my Facebook page and then probably reconvene next weekend, my friend. So have a good one, and we'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
You too, Steve. Thank you, my friend. Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline. Got to take another break. Couple open phone lines right now. Open slate. We've been talking about the Eagles draft, the indictment of Howie Roseman, the tournament that's not something you still can't believe happened in the world of sports. We've got a ton of them. I'll go over them again when we come back, and I'll be right back on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.